When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger. For thousands of appetizing ingredients that inspire countless mouthwatering meals. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week, and up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with points. So you can get big flavors and big savings. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Hi, Mark. Welcome to the podcast.
Hi, Monique. How are you?
I'm good. Thank you for joining us again. You were here with us last time. And today we're going to talk about a topic that I haven't talked about. I don't think I have. I mean, maybe pieces of it may have come up, but we're going to talk about spiritual bypassing and toxic positivity, which I see a lot in just in society in general, and I see spiritual bypassing in both some of the pop psychology or maybe new agey kind of things, as well as in faith communities where there is just this this kind of passing over emotions and just skipping over it. And maybe we can talk about that and what that does to people and to people who actually have emotional issues or have trauma.
Yeah, I think that, you know, as you and I were talking back and forth about this episode, I started researching and I found out that in 1980, around 1980, I believe it was John Wellwood. He was a Buddhist teacher and psychotherapist, and he actually coined the phrase spiritual bypassing. So I kind of got curious about that, and I'm like, what is spiritual bypassing? And I had concepts of it, but as you and I talked about it, but I got a quote here that I'd like to read, and it's from Dr. Craig Cashwell, and I think it really sums up what we're talking about as far as spiritual bypassing. Spiritual bypass involves a focus on the spiritual elements of a situation to the point of excluding the psychological, cognitive, emotional, or other impacts from a situation.
Yeah.
You know, and I think that one of the things that I was taught early on in my career was that you need to look at the person holistically. You know, you need to look at the biological aspects. You need to look at the psychological aspects. You need to look at the sociological aspects, and you need to look at the spiritual, and not in that order, you know, just clump them all together,
yeah.
You know, and if you think about it, if you draw four circles and have them touching each other, all of them, you know, and it makes the part in the middle where they cross over each other, that's mm-hmm. kind of a good picture of the individual, because we're not made of one of those. We're all four of those.
Yeah. Yeah. And I mean, I learned that too, when I was doing my social work degree, and we learned, and when I would do my assessments, we would always do the biological, but you know, we would touch on the psychological, but still, it didn't seem to have that much of an impact on how we would approach the person. It was basically just information. And as you were speaking, when you were reading that definition, I was thinking about like doctors, and I'm not saying all doctors, but mm-hmm. you know, I have found, especially as I've become more trauma informed, I mean, they don't even ask. They ask the questions about your biological or physical symptoms, but not anything about psychological. I mean, they might say, are you depressed? And then there's, you know, a biological route and a medication. but yeah, so it's very interesting. You're right. I think we really see things that way.
Yeah. And I think that, you know, just to be clear, I think we all fall into that, and we have to be careful, because whatever discipline we have, that's the one that we gravitate toward,
yeah.
You know, but I had a woman just a couple of weeks ago who was talking to me about having so many pains and different symptoms. And she's had a whole history of trauma, like severe trauma in her life. You know, of course I recommended that she go to the doctor and get blood work and have a workup, you know, but also, you know, we started working on some somatic stuff and some relaxation and things like that. And it's helped her already, you know, so I don't think it needs to be either or. And I hear, you know, I know you're not saying that either. I think it needs to be all of those, to look at all of the different areas.
Yes. And I wanted to talk about, because I know a lot of people that I've spoken to, and I've experienced this personally myself, but in faith communities, for example. And again, I'm saying faith, I'm just using that as an example, but really, when I talk about not being trauma informed, I'm going to use the faith example, because you can come with, let's say, when we come with our history, with our experiences, with our bodies, with our memories. And some of it isn't even conscious, and yet we are responding certain ways, right? And when people have asked for help, or say they may need help or not feeling well emotionally, very often they can be given, told to maybe pray more or read more, or they don't have enough faith. And I think that that could be really, really hurtful to someone who is hurting and wanting to get help, and then being told, spiritualizing it essentially, by telling them to just pray more. So
Yeah, I think, I think of Abraham Maslow, and he wrote this great thing about the law of the instrument. And what he talked about was that if you, and I'm going to quote it here, if you only see, only tool you have is a hammer, you will tend to see every problem as a nail. And I think that a lot of times we look through a certain lens, and if it's a faith community, they're looking at, praying and reading and meditating, and all those things are really, really important. Absolutely, really important. I don't want to negate those, and I know you're not either, but also to look at the person as a whole being, that we have bodies and that they need to be tended to. I think about a story years ago now. It was at a university, and it's a tragic story of what you're talking about in looking at it just from one perspective. A guy went to university, and at that time he was really struggling with studying, and they were pushing him and saying, you need to be more disciplined, and you need to pray more, and you need to read more, and you need to do this more, and you need to do that more. And so, when he would sit down to do some of these things, he fell asleep. And so, right away they were saying, this is a spiritual problem. This is something that needs to be addressed. You need to be more disciplined. Finally, and this is a tragic story, he took his life. And, it turned out through looking at his history, they believed that he had some medical problems that caused that. So I guess for our listeners and for us, for us also, just to remind ourselves that people are really complex. And so we need to look at the whole person and not just one area, and I think that, for me, a lot of times I'll be really careful when I'm making an assessment to realize that I know very, very little. I know my area, but there's a whole big world out there. And so I utilize referrals for people because it's really important to avoid making tragic mistakes like that.
Yes, absolutely. And we know that becoming trauma informed is, I mean, we slowly see it moving into schools and moving into the medical community slowly. So I do understand that it's going to take time.
Absolutely, yes.
Yeah, and I think, helping people to get educated, or in whatever way we can, passing resources, or can be really helpful and can make a really huge difference. I'm just thinking about mental health was a topic that was really, it really wasn't as welcoming in faith communities. In the past, I see it's changed over the decades, thank God. But I still think we have some work to do.
Yeah, I think of a woman that I dealt with for a long time, and she had a lot of obsessive compulsive behaviors, and she would have to do things over and over and over again. You know, it became paralyzing to her. You know, and people in her community, you know, in her faith community, you know, were kind of challenging her. Are you praying enough? Are you reading enough? Are you doing things enough? You know, and again, those are all good things, but you know, we looked at her history, and we looked at, you know, some of the things that were going on. I referred her to a psychiatrist, and this was interesting because it was when Prozac first came out, you know, and so that dates me with my age, but you know, so she was prescribed the medication, and her symptoms, you know, within 6 to 8 weeks were minimal. You know, and here's something that she had struggled with for years, felt a lot of shame about, a lot of guilt about. And, you know, here, you know, the proper amount of medication with the right assessment really helped with that. And then she was able to, the interesting thing was, then she was able to dig into things a lot deeper in therapy, and she was able to participate with her faith much more and enjoying it much more. You know, so it's, you know, this episode is not to like bash at all the faith community. I'm in a faith community, and so it's really, really important to me to kind of get the word out there that there's a whole person there that has to be treated, you know, including the spiritual.
Yes, I agree. I agree so much. Yeah, I think that a lot of us who've had trauma, we have been hurt in relationships. And I think that a safe community can be an incredible way to heal relational trauma. So we want to be able to be safe or feel safe in a community.
Yeah, I was thinking about us as doing the episode, and I was thinking about, you know, I wanted to be vulnerable and share something that happened just last week at church for me. You know, I had a lot of nightmares the night before on Saturday night from PTSD or complex trauma, and so got up and I was doing okay, and got ready for church, and walked in the door, and our associate pastor came up, and he had his arms out, and you know, gave me a hug. And he said, "How are you?" His name is Corey. And he said, "How are you?" And, you know, I said, "I'm fine." And then I stopped, and I said to him, "You know what, Corey? I'm not fine. Really struggling with processing some nightmares that I had." And he like looked at me with a piercing look of connection, and was like, "I am so sorry to hear that." No, there was no shame, there was no blame. There was just like this dripping of empathy, of connecting with me and saying, and I felt better, you know, like after hearing that right away,
Well,
I
that's
felt better, you know, and I didn't get a chance to tell him so he can listen to this
it.
podcast
And we say thank you so much because
now. Yeah.
that is what I'm talking about exactly when I say healing in safe community, because so many of us with traumas, we know, we suffered alone, and we didn't get those that attunement, that empathy, that connection. I see you, I feel you matter. And we can't go back to our past, but we definitely can have these safe connections and safe relationships in the present. But we need an environment that allows and welcomes vulnerability like he did. And you see, that was such a healing moment for you. And I think it was psychiatrist Dr. Curtis Thompson, who's going to be on soon. He said that with enough of these experiences, we need a lot of them, but we start to rebuild neurons. And so here we have these, we have these patterns that are waiting for someone to walk out of the room or someone's eyes to look the other way, because that's what we had and that's what our body expects. But as we have these new experiences of the opposite, of connection, of empathy, we're healing slowly because it's a new experience. Like that
The
just,
corrective, you know, I
yeah.
think of it as a corrective experience. You know, we talk about, you know, the therapy office having corrective experiences. Well,
Right.
you know what? We can have them with anyone that is they're ready to connect, to attune. I love that word, attune,
Yes,
and
me
to
too.
empathize, and to say, like, come, I'm not going to leave.
Yeah.
You know,
I
and
love
then there's
that.
pulling, and it's okay.
Yeah. And that was brave on your end too. You stopped in the middle. I mean, I don't know how many of us would say, because there's that first part that's like, again, smile. They don't want to hear it. Da-da-da. They don't have time for this. And you stopped and you were saying, I'm going to be honest. I'm going to be vulnerable.
You know, that fine word, you know, everything's fine, 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 fine. You know, like all of us are struggling with things, you know, and so that's where, you know, my heart is for people, especially in the work that I've been called to do, and the book that I wrote, you know, is for the faith community, you know, that it's okay not to be okay.
88% of the work week is spent communicating, so it's important your team does it well. Enter Grammarly. Grammarly's AI helps teams communicate clearly the first time. It shows you how to make words resonate with your audience, helps with brainstorming, and lets you instantly create and revise drafts in just one click. Join over 70,000 teams and 30 million people who use Grammarly to move work forward. Go to grammarly.com/enterprise to learn more. Grammarly. Enterprise ready AI.
Yes. Absolutely. And so, again, this is even a piece that even attachment, understanding like the basics of attachment, why for some people, they may not feel comfortable when you grab them for a hug, or it
Yeah,
may
yeah.
take them time to open up. It's not necessarily like they don't want to. It's that they've learned because of their histories that you've got to show me that you're safe. I'm going to need a lot of experiences or disconfirming experiences before. When we don't know that, we're just coming in, just expecting everyone's the same.
We want those experiences. We just might not be ready for them. It takes us time.
Yeah,
And that's okay.
exactly.
It's
Exactly.
okay.
Yeah. So it is hopeful though, because like I said, I see in myself, I see changes in different communities. So when we talk about spiritual bypassing, let's talk about toxic positivity. Where do you see that happening?
You know, I think that, you know, we put the smile on our face, and we need to greet everyone and tell everyone how wonderful we are, how blessed we are. Things couldn't be better. You
It
know,
sounds like Instagram.
yeah, exactly. So, you know, so we tend to like learn to do that, just kind of like robots. We're all going around saying, yeah, everything's good, everything's fine. And, you know, looking on social media, and everybody's putting all these wonderful pictures on of connection and things. And that's just not reality. And so, you know, even in that illustration that I gave you with Corey, you know, that was my idea of also, you know, being able to be like, no, I don't want to do this anymore. I don't want to pretend that everything is fine. And you know, just that thing of, you know, pretending, and that's what it is. It's pretending that everything is wonderful. And in this world, things are not always wonderful. A lot of times, real, real struggles. And especially for people that have experienced trauma.
Yes. Yes. Yeah. It's making me think, when I was a young mom, I remember thinking, nobody can relate to me. Nobody. I felt like I was the only one in the world. And I realize now that's because people just didn't share, didn't open up. And so it looked like everybody was managing, everybody was okay. I was the only one that was having issues. And I think that that is one of the things I do like. We're starting to see people speak more openly now.
Yeah, and I think you had mentioned your next guest, Kurt Thompson. He has done such wonderful work with, you know, shame and attunement, and just being able to learn your story and tell your story well. And I'm looking forward to that episode, because he has done a lot within the community to really, really help people to realize it's okay to struggle. It's okay to be dysregulated. You know, there's reasons for it. And so excited about people like him that are getting out there and talking.
Yes, absolutely. And also, you know, his just again the idea of finding your people or finding people that welcome you and you know, look into your eyes. I talk about the eyes a lot because is there an expression that says the eyes are the window of the soul? I don't know. But yeah, but I know for myself when I was going through a lot of the trauma that I went through, I was trying to find eyes. I was trying to find eyes because I couldn't speak. And I was trying to say, like, if you look at my eyes, you're going to help me and get me out of here. And sometimes people would look and sometimes they would look away. And that was the message I got. And when I think about his work, he talks a lot about in the present, having this community of people that you come to and you look in their eyes and their eyes are kind and they have empathy.
And yeah, they're looking forward to you. They're looking forward to coming, you know, and they're welcoming you even with their eyes. Yeah. Diane Heller Poole does a lot with eyes and having, I think she talks about like joyful or happy eyes, you know, welcoming eyes, you know, and so that's so important for us to be aware of. You know, another issue I wanted to hit on, if we could, is the idea of forgiveness.
Okay. Yes.
You know, because within faith communities, and I think just within therapeutic communities, forgiveness is a really important thing. You know, but the idea that it's one and done, or that it's a procedure that, you know, you go through, and, you know, one day you're feeling this way about the individual and the next day you're fine, that's not reality. You know, forgiveness, at least I have found, is a real process, you know, and as other things come up in my life, I know I have done a lot of work with my dad and forgiving my dad and for a lot of the things that I went through in my childhood. And, you know, there are times when it creeps back up, of course, or something else happens where it triggers it, you know, and I have to revisit it. And so, you know, I think that I've heard it said that forgiveness isn't like a picture. It's like a motion picture. You know, it's not like a photograph that you look at. It's a motion picture that continues and that you continue to process things. And I just want to stress that because sometimes there's, and I'm one that's big for forgiveness. I think that forgiveness is really important for you. You know, if you've been traumatized to come to some kind of resolution. But I think that a lot of times people try to force it and it's not helpful. You know, again, being trauma-informed, you know, it takes a while for the body to settle down and for us to be able to process things that have happened and then to move toward, you know, moving through the resentment and moving toward a place of forgiveness.
Yeah. And even I was explaining this at this retreat that I went to because someone was talking about we should just forgive, you know, and I said, even if you do say you forgive, and I think it's what you're talking about with the not being a photo, but being like more like a movie. But then that person can walk into the room and suddenly your body will jolt. You'll feel fear or even anger or something. Again, that's because there's a living legacy. There's the imprints inside.
Yeah.
And so
I love that, but with Janina Fisher, you know, that she talks about that living legacy of trauma, that's the problem is these things happen back here, but we're still dealing with them in our bodies today.
Yes, exactly. And when we don't understand that, then we feel shame. And, you know, we might even take on shame that other people, because they don't understand. But if you can have some grace with yourself and know that there's these deep imprints, especially with repeated trauma, our bodies remember things that were dangerous because it's like, that ain't going to happen again. And so it's on the alert for that. So it's going to it's going to be waiting and ready. And so just understanding that and,
you know, that thing of, you know, and again, I've heard this a lot in faith communities, you know, the past is the past.
Yeah.
Well, I talk about my book, the past is not the past when it shows up in the present. And that's what happens with trauma. You know, you use a great illustration of somebody walking in the room and you've done a lot of work and you've resolved and you've forgiven and they come in the room and your heart starts to beat and you feel getting uptight and your body tightens and,
yep.
and, again, you know, you're like, wow, I didn't make any progress. And that's not true. There's just more progress to be made, you know, but realizing that our bodies hold that trauma and that we experience it there, definitely.
And I would even say, and I don't know if this is, you know, people agree with me or not, but I would even say, and maybe you're going to clench for the rest of your life, or maybe you're going to constrict for the rest of your life.
Yeah.
And it is what it is. You might, but
at least you know why you're doing it.
Yes. And you know that it is normal. It makes sense. There's nothing wrong with your body. So all of these kind of shame filled things that we put on ourselves, it's important to understand that they make sense.
Definitely.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think that idea of, you know, one of the things that for me that gets rid of shame is grace, you know, and so me needing to give grace to myself and me needing to give grace to other people, you know, is so important, you know, because, you know, a lot of times people in different communities have not been trained like you and I, and so they have less of an understanding. And so, you know, that's why we're out here doing this, is to kind of educate and to help people find some of the things that we found that are so valuable and so helpful.
Yes. Yes. Would you say grace is also kind of like self-compassion?
Yeah, definitely. Yeah, definitely. Yeah. You know, and self-compassion is something for people who've been traumatized that it's kind of like, what is that? So, you know, it's things that we have to continually process and renew our minds, you know, with these thoughts, you know, and I love what you often say is, you know what, this is totally normal. My body is acting the way my body should for what I've been through.
Yeah.
And that there's no truer statement.
Yes. And that was so freeing for me. Someone asked me that, I think yesterday. Yeah, it was, what was it? Like, how did you start to realize that? And I said, well, it was when I started to learn about how our bodies respond to trauma, like what is actually happening. That just changed everything, and it took away the shame. And so that's what I want for other people, is that. Because my goodness, we're working through, when you've had trauma, you're working through enough. You don't need this additional stuff that is not true, you know?
Unnecessary.
And unnecessary. Yeah. So, and yeah, it is a process. When you were talking about self-compassion, a long, long time ago, I think when I first started on Instagram or Facebook, I remember I wrote about self-compassion, and I had a little picture of a child eating a lemon. Because that's the taste. You want me to be compassionate to myself? It's like, what is that?
Yeah.
It's because no one has ever been compassionate to us. So it just feels so strange and weird. But we do know how to be compassionate, especially those who have pets or we have children. We know how. So it's already there. It's just a question of, you know, being gentle or with ourselves.
You know, redirecting it, you know,
makes a big difference on how we live in this body, but it takes time. Yeah. So is there anything else you want to add to this conversation before we close?
No, I think it's been a great conversation, and I look forward to hearing from people, see what they think about, you know, some of the things we talked about.
Yeah. I'm trying to think if I have a closing, because I know what I wanted to do. I thought about this briefly before we started, and I said, what I really want from this conversation is for people to feel a little more empowered and to feel more hopeful, because there is so much hope. There really, really is. And so I hope they felt that with this conversation, Mark. Thank you for being with us today.
Thanks, Monique. It's been great.
88% of the work week is spent communicating, so it's important your team does it well. Enter Grammarly. Grammarly's AI helps teams communicate clearly the first time. It shows you how to make words resonate with your audience, helps with brainstorming, and lets you instantly create and revise drafts in just one click. Join over 70,000 teams and 30 million people who use Grammarly to move work forward. Go to grammarly.com/enterprise to learn more. Grammarly. Enterprise Ready AI.